From the other end of the street of inns I saw a storm cloud of activity rise up, moonlight reflecting off many crudely fashioned axes and hand blades. The gnolls were charging towards the village square, an army of snarling monsters in unmatching piecemeal armour. Like the one we'd encountered earlier, these were a formidable bunch, hardened desert scavengers, black of fur and a good foot taller than Garethy's forest gnolls. The leader of this pack could probably have crushed a Garethy gnoll to death between his pectoral muscles.
"Now wait 1 minute," bellowed the mayor. "We ain't quite ready yet."
The gnoll charge slowed and stopped, lowering their weapons and scaling back their war cries into mildly perturbed grumbling.
"You've got to understand," said the mayor, turning back to the adventurers. "Gil Tex is climbing up again. We've already moseyed our way through most of the town planning budget for the year."
"So how do you explain that beggar?"
"I ain't got no explanation for that, sirs. I told you, that fella must have been some kind of independent operator. Now are all these gnolls gonna have to kill themselves, or are you gonna be adventurers tonight?"
His passionate appeal utterly failed to do the trick. Many of the adventurers were already drifting away, along with most of the bored spectators.
"Now hold on!"
yelled Mayor Dubley, as more and more of his audience deserted him.
"I could be persuaded to go up to 23 points a head."
"It's too late for that now," said the dwarf spokesman, following his colleagues. "You waste our time, we lose the spark."
All Dubley and the gnoll horde could do was stand, open-mouthed and crestfallen, impotently watching the stars of the evening's entertainment wander off into the night. Rumbled the head gnoll, having difficulty pushing his words through the hideous forest of pointy teeth that filled his mouth.
"Yes, I suppose ye can still have your free meal coupons," sighed Dubley. "Collect 'em from the town hall."
Excitement rejuvenated, the gnolls dispersed. I suddenly noticed that I'd unconsciously ducked when they'd arrived, and was now watching the street with my non-existent nose hooked over the window sill. I stood, attempting to gather my dignity.
"What was all that about?"
asked Merrill, as we rejoined the priest. Several adventurers had already returned to the bar to resume drinking.
"I dunno," I said, "but I have a horrible feeling that it was my fault.
We should probably get out of here and back on the road. We can meet Slippery John on his way back."
"What, right now?" She clicked her tongue. "Look, I know a lot of people have been trying to destroy you lately, but that's no reason to be paranoid."
As if to punctuate her sentence, the entrance door suddenly broke off its hinges and flew horizontally across the room, erupting into bits against the body of a poorly placed rogue. Two of the invading gnolls entered, squeezing themselves uncomfortably through the human-sized doorway, like hairy, murderous toothpaste.
"What the hell, guys?" shouted the innkeeper, furious. "You know you're not supposed to damage property. This was covered at the meeting."
went one of the gnolls, apologetically. He was the slimmer of the two, which meant he could probably only bench-press 2 or 3 horses at once. He added, pointing a filthy black claw directly at me.
"Oh, balls," I retorted, not the slightest bit surprised.
The only way out was through the advancing wall of fur and muscle that was now dividing the bar and reception area. Choices and consequences raced through my head. Every single one of them ended with at least one part of me getting chewed on. A particularly large dollop of foamy spittle landed next to my foot, and my brain desperately accelerated.
"New quest!" I heard myself yell. "Save me from gnolls! Big rewards!"
"Ugh!" muttered Thaddeus, still calmly sitting.
at least accept fate with a little dignity, child of damnation.
It had done the trick, though. The monsters froze. At some point between my utterance of the words big and rewards, every adventurer in the bar had finished their drinks, stood up, and begun fondling their weapon hilts. There passed a significant moment of stillness. Nobody in the room wanted to be the first to make a rash movement that could snowball into large amounts of property damage. Went the slimmer Noll, no doubt also the more erudite of the pair. What was that? I hissed. Merrill's mouth materialized next to my ear.
I think he said, "New quest, help us capture undead, even bigger rewards."
You speak Noll?
No, but the gist was pretty obvious.
She gestured to the adventurers, who had all turned from the Nolls to us like heavily armed weather fanes.
What now? Offer even more rewards than that?
I sighed. We'll be back and forth all bloody night. No, I think I'm just going to go with the flow. I folded my arms and bowed my head as a shiny new elven mace slammed across the back of my skull. It was the first time I'd been killed since my dalliance with the Deleter Realm, and as my spirit was pushed out into the dead world, I realized that I hadn't escaped from that bizarre place unscathed. Something had changed. I could still see the washed-out physical world around me. I saw my body, along with Merrill's and Thaddeus's, being slung over a Noll's bulging shoulder. I could see my companions' souls being cast out to join me in the dead world. But everything else was different. My mind felt sluggish and dull. My astral form was slanted at a strange angle, and one of my arms was hanging uselessly.
"Jim," said Merrill's ghost, concerned.
The dead world was flickering in and out like a broken light. It was like two worlds were trying to occupy the same space. One was the standard ghostly dead realm, and the other... Physically, it was the exact same place, but everything was formed from glowing lines against a black void, like thin brushstrokes on black velvet. The terrain beneath my feet was a network of green triangles, as were the walls and fittings of the Cronenberg buildings. My corpse was a body-shaped yellow cage, while the Nolls and adventurers tormenting it were a vibrant red. The souls of Merrill and the priest were white. No, I realized, they were grey. They only looked white because of the millions of tiny deleters that swarmed over their astral forms like ants. I looked down at my hands. They were all over me, too, scurrying all over my ghostly flesh with skinny white arms and legs. Like the other deleters, they were white humanoids with blank white heads, wings, and robes. But these were the size of cockroaches, and scrabbled insanely about with none of the emotionless deliberation of their larger fellows. They were all over my limbs, my torso, even my face, teasing my eyelids and climbing down my nose hole. I opened my mouth to scream, and felt hundreds more of them pouring out of my throat. XX Super Simon XX signed in at 9:44 a.m.
What's cooking, cool cats? It's cool that I'm working from home today, right?
Yes, please work from home as often as you like.
Sweet. What are we on top of today?
Population numbers thing again.
I took care of that already. Do keep up, son.
Yes, I remember you saying, but there are still three resurrected NPCs unaccounted for.
Just three won't matter.
They kind of will, actually.
Anything that doesn't belong in the world can corrupt the build.
Okay, fine. I'll get Barry onto it.
Barry who?
He's the NPC I put on top of the Yawnport job. I've been talking to him a bit. It's amazing how intelligent the NPCs are. I think we should all be very proud of what we've done on this project.
You only just joined.
Anyway, gotta run. Got important work to get on top of. Can't sit around chatting like you two slackers.
XX Super Simon XX signed out at 9:58 a.m.
Do you think he's actually going to do any work?
God, I hope not. That's the only reason I suggested it. With any luck, he's wanking himself raw as we speak.
I woke to find myself back inside the body for which I was developing a deep antipathy. Particularly for my eyes, because a heavily laden Knoll loincloth was bouncing and swaying directly in front of my face. Blood was beginning to ooze into my head, so I had probably been upside down for some time. My wrists and ankles were lashed to a Knoll spear, carried between the well-endowed gentleman behind me, and presumably another Knoll outside my field of vision. The air had the hot and stifling quality of midday. Looking up, or down, I saw a sandy desert trail rolling along. A few old stories I had heard regarding desert Knolls and their customs chose that moment to start haunting me. "I feel I should mention I taste absolutely bloody awful," I croaked. It was almost certainly true, but my captor's thundering thighs weren't convinced. "Seriously, if you've ever poured really old milk on your breakfast cereal by mistake, multiply that by a few million.
Jim, is that you?"
I tried to look around, but only succeeded in rocking myself back and forth sickeningly.
"Merrill? Where are you?"
"I don't know."
The voice was coming from my right.
"I'm looking at a Knoll's bottom."
"You got lucky."
"Take your suffering in silence," came a voice from my left. "For it is the meek who will inherit the Lord's bounty."
"Vroom,"
snapped a Knoll. I assumed the word meant silence, because there are certain traditions between captors and captives. I complied. Talking wasn't easy from this angle anyway. As the Knolls carried us God knows where, I tried to digest what I'd seen in the dead world. But those thoughts were all being supplanted by thoughts on what it would be like to be stuck inside an undying body, as it was split into mouthfuls and frog-marched single file through a monster's digestive tract. Spending eternity as a dollop by the side of the road was not an appealing prospect. Eventually, whichever Knoll was taking the leadership role went,
"Vroom."
The procession halted, and I was treated to the hypnotic sight of a Knoll's posing pouch quivering to a halt.
"Are these the ones we discussed?" said a new voice.
It didn't belong to a Knoll, but I took very little comfort in that. There was a strict headmastery tone to the voice that only gets used when someone is about to get in serious trouble.
"Bruh."
"Cut them free, but leave their wrists bound."
"Bruh, bruh, bruh."
"No reimbursement of combat materials will not be authorized until total completion of this assignment."
The Knolls did as they were bid. The nearest one to me swung its massive makeshift blade at my bonds, freeing me from the spear and very nearly some of my fingers. I collapsed into the dust. I took the opportunity to sit up and determine where we were. A vast desert continued endlessly and unhelpfully in every direction. We were on a wide stone road that I guessed was part of the adventure trail, but there wasn't a single sign of civilization on the horizon. I realized with some distress that this was the kind of place you'd go to dispose of a corpse. Our rescuers, for want of a better word, were an elf and a dwarf, Their neatly pressed black suits and ties really didn't seem like practical desert wear. But if they were in any way uncomfortable, they were hiding it incredibly well. The elf was painfully skinny, not unusual for elves, and seemed incapable of standing still for even a second. He was constantly pacing, flicking his head around, and twirling a large butterfly knife between his bony fingers. His perpetual grin was wider than any I'd ever seen, and that included several guys I'd known at Dreadgraves with no skin on their faces. The dwarf could be called stout, but not the same way you'd call an innkeeper stout because you're too polite to call him fat. He was like a broad barrel full of pure rigid muscle. He stood, meaty little arms folded, copious black moustache creased into a businesslike frown with the merest sneer of contempt. He was wearing a battered iron helmet that didn't go very well with his suit, but then neither did the rest of him. Merrill, Thaddeus, and I were arranged in a row before the black-suited couple, then forced to kneel by way of deft kicks to the backs of our knees. The elf sauntered over to me, nearly hypnotizing me with the endless circling of his knife. His eyes were two harsh white marbles in dark sunken sockets. "So, my little pickled eggs," he said in a wheedling voice, lifting my chin with a finger like an ice pick. "Expect you're wondering why..." I winced. "Yeah, I get this a lot." Somehow vomiting only served to heighten his maniacal glee. With an excited giggle, he slowly stood back upright, gangly limbs audibly cracking, then reacquired his grin, now a little stained with bile and bits of food. The dwarf hadn't moved. "Expect you're wondering why you're here, aren't you, my three little pigs?"
"It matters not," exclaimed Thaddeus suddenly. "I answer not to your crude pagan threats, only to the perfect enlightenment of..."
snapped the lead gnoll, shoving the back of Thaddeus's head with the shaft of an axe. Something snapped audibly, and the priest fell face down into the sand, limp.
"Expect you're wondering why you're here, aren't you, my two little ducks?" repeated the elf, tone of voice unchanged.
Merrill glanced back at the gnolls momentarily.
"To be eaten?"
"It was not our intention to have you consumed by our workforce," barked the dwarf in a monotone.
The elf sat cross-legged in front of me and leaned forward, staring in fascination.
"So it's true," he said, reaching out and tucking a stray length of hair behind my ear. "The dead walk among us. What was it like?"
I was leaning back as far as I could manage, and his nose was still piercing my personal space.
"What? Being dead, what was it like?"
He sounded like a schoolboy interrogating a friend about his first sexual experience.
"Was there a god? Why'd you come back? Are you immortal now, too? Do you feel pain? Do you feel this?"
His arm was a blur for a fraction of a second. Then he wasn't holding his knife anymore. I looked down and saw the hilt quivering into my chest.
"No, we don't feel pain," I said, not wanting my terrified silence to bait him any further.
He rolled his eyes.
"Didn't think you would."
He withdrew his knife with a chunk and stood up.
"The post-mortem condition of the three suspects appears to leave them largely unfazed by physical torture, Mr. Wonderful, and as such you will be deprived of your chief source of fulfillment on this occasion."
Mr. Wonderful let the knife complete a few more revolutions, then thrust it straight through his right palm. He watched his own blood drool down into his sleeve for a moment, like a cat watching the birds.
"Fulfillment," he repeated, finally. "I can't remember the last time I got fulfillment out of this gig.
Is it true you lot died before the infusion?
Merrill and I nodded wordlessly, staring at his hand.
God, those times were rich. I could take pride in my work back then. I could cut a lovely little smile into a pretty face and know it'd have it for life. I could feel a man's dying breath upon my sleeve and know he wouldn't be back up and writing formal letters of complaint the moment I took my eyes off him.
His tone of voice remained level, but his face was screwed up with hatred, and his fingers were drumming the knife hilt like hyperactive woodpeckers.
"Who are you?" asked Merrill politely.
We jumped as the elf suddenly tore the knife out of his hand. His face instantly became calm and serene, before he resumed grinning, and the corners of his mouth strained back towards his ears.
"My name is Mr. Wonderful. My lovely assistant is Baug."
"We are employed as agents of the Adventurers' Guild," said Baug stiffly. "Our official job description is troubleshooting, but we are chiefly called upon to administer violent coercion."
Mr. Wonderful's grin remained, but his eyes weren't joining in.
"Baug, my little comrade in arms, did we not have a pleasant chinwag last week about you revealing our intentions too early in conversation with everyone we meet?"
"I recall our conversation, Mr. Wonderful, but I dismissed your request on the assumption that your notoriously short attention span would cause you to do likewise."
"Well, anyway, my little sanitary towels," went Mr. Wonderful, turning back to me and gently caressing my scalp with his blade. "Stop me if I'm off the mark. Judging by your quiet little faces, you might have a little inkling suspicion that you know why we brought you here."
"Doubtless the instruction of the Fallen Ones," came the muffled voice of Thaddeus, still face down in the sand.
A nearby knoll dutifully stood on his head, and he was silenced. "Something to do with Cronenberg?" I hazarded.
"Well, sit this boy on a piggy bank and call him right on the money. Picture the scene, my little toothbrush. A little birdie tells us that there's some nobody quest-giver in a nowhere town raking in coinage in return for adventure points. That doesn't seem like a tenable state of affairs now, does it?"
"What makes you think it was me?" I asked.
"Our contacts in Cronenberg furnish descriptions of the perpetrators," said Baug.
"How do you think we think it was you, you sepulchral retard?" went Mr. Wonderful angrily. "How many animated corpses do you think there are walking around in Cronenberg?"
He jammed his knife into his other palm and tottered a little as the pain flooded his mind with hormone soup.
"So tell me, my little stinkwort, where can be found the magical portal to the fairy realm from which you came, where money grows on trees and economic crises can be averted by clicking your heels together and wishing with all your might?"
I'd known from the moment it happened that my windfall would return to bite me in the arse tenfold. But even so, this was a bit much. "Look, I'm sorry," I said. "I'll give the talons back. It was just a little joke that got out of hand and, in retrospect, wasn't very funny."
"The talons?"
Mr. Wonderful seemed highly amused, which I decided was an extremely bad sign.
"It is your bestowing of fraudulently large amounts of points, not your theft of talons, that are of concern," said Baug.
"But they're just numbers on paper," I said. Another grisly chlock echoed off into the desert as Mr. Wonderful cleanly impaled his own thigh.
"Oh, dear," he said, as if he'd merely dropped the toast. "Another foreign hick right off the boat, who didn't bother to read the brochures. How does it work where you're from? you bung adventurers, half a crate of turnips, and a pair of your dad's old pants, to chase the foxes out of Squealy McBumrape's pig farm!" The volume of his voice was slowly rising, but plunged back down after he pulled the knife out. "Things work differently on a sophisticated continent, my ugly little rural friend. We got ourselves a little organized."
"Did you know you used the word little an awful lot?" said Merrill.
Mr. Wonderful ignored her, but I saw his lower eyelid twitch.
"The Lowlead Adventurers Guild has an arrangement with city councils, town authorities, mobile collectives, and licensed independent quest providers," said Baug.
I hadn't seen any part of him but his mouth move since the moment we'd met.
"Each month they pay the guild appropriate fees and are given a suitable points rate to be divided between their appointed quest-givers and bestowed to adventurers upon completion of quests. Points can be redeemed at Adventurers' Guild branches for bed, board, and training, paid for by the quest-provider fees."
"This, my small jelly deals," said Mr. Wonderful, "is what we call a balanced economy. And forgive me for going out on a particularly blackened and uncomfortable limb, but I don't think you've coughed up quest-giver dues, have you, my tiny cream puffs? So..."
He steepled his fingers so hard that his knuckles looked about to burst.
"How would you propose we remedy this unfortunate bubble in the Adventurers Guild's wallpaper?"
"I have a big bag of money," I said.
"Not any more, you don't, manky pants. But it's not going to be enough. You used up the points allotment equivalent to about 12 of those bags. Have another stab at it."
He twirled his knife meaningfully.
"You could ask the adventurers to give the points back."
Mr. Wonderful's eyes widened, and he slapped his forehead with a bony crack.
"Well, Baug," he screamed, "there was me under the impression they hadn't given this any thought, but witness how the lady bowls me over with her logic. Ask the adventurers to give the points back. I'm quite livid at myself for not having thought of it."
"Presumably you did not think of it because the points are virtually untraceable, and it is highly probable that they have already been redeemed for unreturnables such as room and board," said Baug.
Mr. Wonderful leaned on Baug fondly.
"Irony goes completely over his head, doesn't it? Because he's very short!"
"What do you want from us?" I asked.
"Ah, that's better. I like you. Well, my diminutive leaping salmon, my first idea was to grind you all up into powder and sprinkle you over my herb garden, which would have certainly brightened up my day, and probably my rosemary also. But that wouldn't bring the money back, would it?"
"The usual punishment for quest fraud is forced service in the Work Rehabilitation Centre in the Royal Palace at Lowlead City," said Baug.
"Work Rehabilitation Centre," mimicked Mr. Wonderful, holding Baug's head in both hands and flicking his moustache ends up and down. "I always preferred the old name, Dungeons, but no one pays attention to an old-fashioned murderer."
He stared sadly into the middle distance for a second, then reassembled his grin.
"So, my microscopic hat stands, how quietly do you intend to come?"
I took a moment to reflect. Our hands were tied. We were in the middle of hostile desert. There were two professional murderers in front of us, and an entire Knoll tribe was stinking up the rear. It seemed odd that he'd even ask. But then, there seemed to be a lot of odd things about Mr. Wonderful.
"We'll come quietly," I said.
"My life just sets up a series of disappointments, doesn't it?" said Mr. Wonderful, twirling his knife back inside his suit jacket. I'm sick of all these ignorant foreigners. Wish we could have another decent, deliberate fraud like Mr. Churley.
Mr. Churley himself cannot be relied upon to provide you with such stimulation, because the excruciating trauma his body underwent in our last meeting will no doubt remain fresh in his memory.
Oh, shut up. Mr. Wonderful made a bored gesture with his fingers, and then one of the gnolls must have bashed me around the back of the head, because I died again.
From Brian Garrett to Donald Sunderland, CC, William Williams, subject Simon.
I do understand your concerns. I did hear some similar things from Peter and Gavin after the Ham Fighters 3 debacle. But have you ever considered that you just haven't been creating the right environment where Simon can have a chance to shine? There's clearly a lot of talent there. I mean, you all played Interstellar Bum Pirates. It has to take something special to create the WTC's Game of the Year, right? Let's all try to be team players, and maybe this year will be ours. Regards, Brian Garrett, CEO, Loincloth Entertainment.
From Donald Sunderland to Brian Garrett, CC William Williams, subject Simon.
Hello, Brian. There's really no way of putting this diplomatically, but I strongly believe that progress is only looking good because Simon is spending so much time away. You know that I usually have something nice to say about everyone, and even when I don't, I'll usually be quiet and passive-aggressive about it. But Simon Townsend is an incompetent boob. Please take him away from us and put him somewhere where he can do no harm to our project or the human race. Don.
From Brian Garrett to Donald Sunderland, CC William Williams, subject Simon.
Hi, boys. I'm a little concerned by some reports I'm hearing that Simon has worked at home for 4 days out of the last week. We should be stepping things up for crunch time, and it's important that the whole team be on hand at all times. Don, as his supervisor, you should be putting your foot down on this. Progress is looking good on Mogworld at the moment, but things are only going to get tougher. Regards, Brian Garrett, CEO, Loincloth Entertainment.
Mogworld by Yahtzee Croshaw.
Oi, said Mr. Wonderful, as a ringing slap across the back of the head brought me back to consciousness. You awake, my little plump cherry. We are here.
I opened my eyes to find myself lashed to the back of a horse, face to face with its huge, muscular arse. The gentle rocking from its measured up-down motion almost lulled me back into the doze, before a second smack brought me to full awareness. I looked up. Lolied City was clearly a great and powerful centre of civilization. The buildings were fine white stone and loomed several stories high. The streets were wide and actually paved, with separate sections for pedestrians and carriages. Back in Garethy, you just had to develop the instinct to dive to the side whenever you hear horses coming. And yet there was something wrong about Lolied City, even from what little I could see over the horse's arse. Considering it was mid-afternoon, there didn't seem to be many people on the streets. There were a few adventurers running around on their paid errands, half of them with the determined hip-swinging lope of the syndrome. The only civilians I could see were small clusters of three or four loitering on a couple of street corners. They didn't look like they were in a hurry to do anything or get anywhere. They walked around dragging their feet like sulky children on the walk to school, or made disinterested conversation while staring at their shoes. I found myself remembering the conversations I'd had in the dead world with my fellow zombies after another round of futile leaps off Dreadgrave's tower. people brought together by mutual misery, trapped together by something they couldn't see or understand.
"Oi!" yelled Mr. Wonderful, smacking me again. "I said, you awake!"
"Yes, yes, I'm awake."
"What?"
Another smack.
"I said, I'm awake."
"Good!" He smacked me 3 more times in quick succession. All my remaining teeth were swaying back and forth like seasick sailors.
"Put your curtsying skirts on. We're meeting the king."
"We're what?" came Merrill's voice.
"Use of any city's work rehabilitation center requires approval from the resident executive officer," said Baug.
"Procedure," said Mr. Wonderful, pronouncing the word like he was trying to dislodge something from his teeth. We rode up the main street and through a set of massive gates into the grounds of what could only have been the royal palace. Because the guards outside were wearing preposterous furry hats and purple tunics, and royalty are the only ones who seem to be able to get away with making people wear that sort of thing. The palace itself was a glorious building, all high towers and classical arches constructed in pricey white marble. Its shape was utterly ruined by a much newer extension that hugged the side of the main building like a barnacle. It was constructed almost entirely from black glass, just like the guildhouse from Cronenberg, with a matching queue of adventurers lined up at the entrance. We rode past the queue and up to the main doors of the palace proper. They were wide open, and a few men in black suits were lounging about dragging on cigarettes.
"Let's keep it moving, my little pineapple fritters," said Mr. Wonderful.
He smartly undid my bonds and pushed me off the horse with his foot. Merrill and Thaddeus were similarly removed from the back of Baug's horse, and the 3 of us were prodded meaningfully towards the grand palace entrance with Mr. Wonderful's butterfly knife. Our hands were still bound, but at least we could walk on our own. We trudged past a number of the flamboyantly dressed ceremonial guards, who stood motionless at regular intervals against the walls, clutching halberds. They were watching Mr. Wonderful and a couple of other black-suited Adventurers Guild thugs, and radiating so much repressed anger that they could have served as a central heating system. Mr. Wonderful held out a hand and gently slapped each one in the face as we walked by. We passed through a pair of ornate oak doors and into the great hall. The whole of my family's farm could probably have fit in it, including the fields, maybe even the Blumpkin farm next door, which would certainly have made the feud more interesting. The sheer size of the place was underlined by the fact that there was only one piece of furniture in the room. The king's throne stood at the end of a magnificent mosaic that covered the entire floor, once pristine, now horribly scuffed by the expensive black shoes of the Adventurers Guild agents, who swaggered around like they owned the place. We took a position off to the side while we waited for business to be concluded with the person ahead of us in the queue. He was an immensely unhappy-looking man in the dirt-spattered clothes of a farmer.
"Forward,"
commanded the king, bored. Quivering all over with nerves, the farmer approached the throne, cap in hand, as a guild agent on either side loosely but firmly held his shoulders.
"Your Majesty," he said, his fingers drumming uncertainly on the brim of his hat, "my farm just isn't making enough to pay the quest-giver fees. People aren't buying as much corn as they used to."
The King of Lowlead was surprisingly young and handsome, or at least had been when the infusion hit, with a black beard and the kind of deep tan that can only be achieved with serious money and the frequent exotic holidays it can buy. He sat slouching in the throne in a bright red military uniform with polished gold buttons, with a coldly angry look on his face, as if he were upset at being the only one who bothered to dress up. Before replying, the king glanced at the guild agent in loosely cut suit and narrow-brimmed hat who was leaning casually on the throne's ridiculously tall backrest. To the king's relief, the agent seemed to have nothing to add.
"What do you need the quests for?"
"Snufflebets keep interfering with my crop. I have to keep hiring adventurers to drive them away. Your Majesty, please, I have no alternatives. My sons are all away at college, and my wife is too fired. I can't be watching my field all day and all night. I tried it for a while, but after 3 days I started hallucinating and set my field on fire."
The man standing by the throne finally spoke, inspecting his fingernails throughout.
"What did you do that for?" he asked, with no apparent interest in the answer.
I don't really remember. I just knew that whatever it was, it had to be killed by fire. Anyway, I'm here to ask that we be given just a little more time to pay. I'm getting a postal order from my relatives soon."
The king opened his mouth to speak, but his adviser got there first. "Of course you can have time to pay. You've always diligently paid your dues until now, and we're always keen to reward loyalty. Give this month a miss and just pay double next time, okay?"
There was nothing but absolute warmth and sincerity in his voice, which seemed to trouble the farmer even more. His eyes flicked left and right.
"Is that all?"
The adviser still hadn't looked at him.
"I don't know, is it?"
"Yes, yes, that's all. Thank you, Your Majesty."
"Run along, then."
The farmer was deftly spun around by his two minders and escorted from the room. I couldn't help noticing the ghastly look on the farmer's face. He had clearly been running a lot of worst-case scenarios through his head, and the fact that none of them had occurred had only amplified his dread.
"Next," went the king's adviser.
The king gave him a dirty look of royal proportions.
"State your—"
went the monarch.
"Mr. Wonderful," said the adviser, daintily wiping the king's mouth with a hanky, "what do we keep telling you about your interrogation methods? The information's never reliable, and it really hurts our image."
"It's all right," I sighed. "This is my actual face."
"I haven't found a good nose replacement," said Merrill cheerfully. "I had my eye on a doorknob at one point, but I didn't think he'd go for it."
"We have extrapolated that the suspect's expired pre-infusion," said Baug, just behind me, "and currently exist in a state of mobile expiry fueled by necromantic magic."
"They're undead," said the king, sitting up.
"They are undead,"
said Thaddeus, who had been uncharacteristically quiet for the walk up.
"I am a reborn spirit in service to a higher cause. I will accept no further interrogation, for I am exempt from the petty judgment of man. Only to the highest authority of heaven will I bow."
His statement didn't impress as much as he'd hoped. A few nearby agents exchanged confused glances, as if a mouse had just marched into a cat restaurant and demanded to see the manager.
"I am a priest of the Seventh-day Advent Hedged Evolutionists," continued Thaddeus, "answerable only to a jury of the High Pruners in accordance with the 73rd Judicial Treaty."
73rd, repeated the king's adviser. "I know that's ringing a bell somewhere."
He stroked his chin theatrically.
"The 73rd Treaty was revised in the reappraisal of national policy in the week that followed the beginning of the Adventurers Guild's partnership with the Lowlead government," said Baug. "The document was included in the second bonfire of the third day."
"List the charges," droned the adviser, bored again, after Thaddeus's confident expression dissolved.
"Quest fraud," said Mr. Wonderful.
We'll just give them the standard holiday package and go.
Now, now, said the king, suddenly taking a lot more interest, and sitting up as straight and noble as he could manage. Our judicial system prides itself on its merciful nature. I'm sure it was just a misunderstanding.
This king was certainly an improvement on Derek the Fourth of Borregaard. I nodded as emphatically as I could.
The costs of the suspect's fraudulent selling of guild points totaled over 12,000 talons, said Baug.
For a moment all was still but for the sound of the king's drumming fingers echoing loudly through the hall.
Yes, well, he said finally, mistakes are made. Newcomers to our land often have trouble grasping the point system. We should be understanding.
Their actions are also believed to have been a direct cause of the current economic crisis in Kronenberg, added Baug. The adviser looked up. Really? Is that why there have been so many riots there lately?
Small communities always bounce back from these things, said the king through his teeth.
How many buildings burned down this morning? 7, said the adviser. 12, including a guild facility, corrected Baug. There were also 87 confirmed fatalities.
Yes, and we missed them for this, said Mr. Wonderful spitefully. Can we take the graveyard triplets downstairs now? They're as guilty as all buggers.
Let them go, insisted the king.
Every agent in the room instantly twisted their faces like they had a sour taste in their mouths.
1 month work rehabilitation for every 100 talons, droned the adviser, waving us away. Usual arrangement. Every 5 days of good behaviour can be exchanged for free restaurant coupons upon release. Next.
The king suddenly surprised everyone by standing up, pulling himself to his full regal height and smashing the end of his sceptre into the ground with a conversation-silencing crash.
"I," he roared, "am the king!"
The adviser coughed, unimpressed.
"Yes, your majesty, you're the king, a noble, wise king. So noble and so wise that he understands exactly the importance of the relationship his kingdom has with the Adventurers' Guild."
His tone remained bored and civil, but there was a lilt in his last few words that brought to mind a concealed knife flashed momentarily in a sleeve. His royal wetness sat back down.
"Just take them to the damned dungeons," he muttered.
Work
rehabilitation, bloody centre.
Mr. Wonderful led us through a labyrinth of opulent chambers and down the well-worn steps of a broad spiral staircase. As we descended below the surface, the magnificent decor gave way, firstly to the fat-streaked swelter of the kitchens, then the pungent haze of the wine cellars and the giggly squeaks of drunken rats, and finally the torch-lit stone passageways of the dungeons. In adherence to some kind of unspoken rule among architects, the dinginess of the dungeons was in direct proportion to the opulence of the upper levels. The tunnel walls switched intermittently between ancient brickwork and natural cavern, and were too narrow to allow anything but single file. The fetid stench of corpse-rot and sewage drifted through the air, alongside the anguished cries of tormented souls. Occasionally we passed occupied cells, and filth-spattered skinny arms would reach out to scratch at us and tug at our clothes. On the whole, it was rather homey. It took me right back to the good old days of dungeon duty back in Dredgrave's fortress. These lacked Dredgrave's professional touch, though, as if the architect had been ashamed of himself. At the very deepest point of the dungeons, the tight corridors opened out into a huge underground chamber. The ceiling was too high to see, and most of the floor had given way into a deep black chasm.
We edged along a narrow ledge that ran along a rough-hewn wall honeycombed with misshapen cell doors.
"This one looks like your colour, doesn't it, my physically reduced chocolate biscuit?"
He slapped me ringingly on the back and I stumbled into the cell. Barely waiting for the last of my limbs to cross the threshold, Mr. Wonderful slammed the bars shut behind me.
"Comfy?" he said,
his omnipresent grin glistening in the torchlight.
"Don't hesitate to tell the guard if you need anything. He comes around once every few months. Well, have a nice decade."
He disappeared for a moment, then came back.
"That was supposed to be ironic. I wasn't sure if you picked up on that."
The sound of his pointy-toed shoes flapping musically against the rocky ground drifted away into silence. I sat down upon the mattress, which was about as thick as a folded piece of toilet paper, and took in my new home. The cell was little more than a hole carved out of Lowlead's unyielding red foundation, probably by lowest bidder contractors working with cheap excavation spells on a lousy deadline. I could only have stood up straight if I'd sawn my head off from the ears upwards. The walls were so uneven I could have used them for grating cheese. I lay back on the mattress, with my head against the back wall, my feet extended through the bars in the cell door. A sneaky rat nibbled a scrap from my toe, then dropped dead after a squeaky coughing fit. It was almost perfect. The sheer distance between me and the lunacies of the surface world was as tangible as a big, comfortable quilt. I wasn't dead, but being locked away in my very own hole, in no danger of getting any more bits sawn off, maybe that could be enough.
"Jim," came Merrill's voice from the cell to the left, "I just realized you were the only one doing the frauding, but they threw all three of us in here. What's with that?"
"Your every touch leaves stains of blackness," added Thaddeus from the cell to my right. "You drag even the purest souls down into the maelstrom of slime from which you crawled."
A little air escaped from my puffed-up mood. "You could have mentioned you were innocent at any time.
I was kind of expecting you to."
I didn't respond. I lay back on the mattress and closed my eyes.
"Jim!"
My entire face twitched. "Yes, Merrill?"
"I'm a little bit upset, actually, Jim."
"Well, I'm very sorry, all right," I snapped.
"See, sorry was all I wanted. Didn't hurt, did it?"
"Could you shut up for a while, please? I'm trying to think." More accurately, I was trying to explore my implanted memories. Dying was the easy way to bring them out in a rush, but the dead world's new look gave me the willies. Fortunately, the more deleter communication I saw, the easier it became to access it. I just needed to lie back, shut out all stimuli, think of the badgers, and slowly it would... Really exciting project to be working on. I think this is the first time a game has featured total procedural generation in every aspect. Obviously, we've had to nudge its evolution here and there to create the world we and the players want, but otherwise the planet basically built itself.
Certainly sounds exciting. Of course, another thing that has caused some excitement is the news that Simon Townsend has joined the team, who readers will know as the visionary genius behind Interstellar Bum Pirates. What has he brought to the table? Hello?
Sorry, could you hold on a second? I'll BRB. IM sign out 2:28 p.m. IM sign in 2:29 p.m. Dub, help me out. I'm doing an interview and I need something nice to say about the dickhead.
I think you're typing in the wrong window.
Jim, called Merrill again, her whining voice spearing through my trance. I kept eyes and mouth firmly closed, as futile as it would be. Refusing to respond would only give her more silence to fill.
Jim, I can't get the bars open.
I gave up. It's a cell. It's not supposed to open.
I know, but how are we going to get out?
I don't want to get out. I like it here. It's nice and safe, and a few seconds ago it was quiet.
A pause. What about the quest?
Bugger the quest!
Merrill paused. Then the pause stretched on a bit and upgraded itself to a stunned silence, and then to a sulk. At that point, I opened one eye.
What's the matter now?
Nothing, she said quickly. I just hate it when you make that giving up talk.
You know what? Me too. It always seems to jinx it.
Something tweaked my foot.
Hey, said a new voice. Wake up.
I gritted my teeth. You'd have thought I'd be able to find some peace and quiet in a sodding oubliette.
Who is it?
A friend. I doubted that. The only things I counted as anything close to friends were currently scuttling about laying eggs in my liver. A figure was crouched just outside my cell, dressed in a black cloak with a cowl that concealed most of their features in shadow. Who are you?
I trust you didn't believe yourself entirely without allies in Lolied City, hissed the newcomer. I'm a friend of the Magic Resistance. They are still very keen to meet you and your associates.
A faint, slippery John-shaped bell rang somewhere in my memories.
Oh, take this.
A little yellow shape rolled into the cell.
There's a key to your cell inside that scone. You'll have to find your own way around the guards, but keep to the servants' tunnels and you shouldn't have a problem. Good luck.
Just one thing, I said.
Of course.
You're the king, aren't you? A long pause.
What on earth makes you think that?
You aren't even disguising your voice, and you're still wearing your crown under your hood. He pulled his hood down tighter, and his voice suddenly dropped an octave.
I am a mysterious stranger. That's all you need to know.
Oh, come on. You buggered it up and you know it. Man up and move on. Somewhere in the darkness of his hood, two deeper pools of darkness implied flaring nostrils.
Do you know who you're talking to?
Yes, the king. Another long pause.
Shut up!
Then he disappeared. I remained where I was, watching the key-filled scone, making no attempt to pick it up. The key represented freedom, but freedom to do what? Get blasted to ashes by Barry, or sliced to ribbons by Mr. Wonderful? Failing that, just wander around until every single person in the universe wanted to grind me into paste? At least nothing in this cell was trying to light me on fire. Perhaps for now it would be prudent to stay. Jim? Came Merrill's voice. Who was that? What did he say?
I picked up the scone. Just the room service, I replied, tucking it under my mattress.
Everything was blessedly peaceful again, and there was still information in my brain to be extracted. I carefully lay my head back, waited 5 minutes for good measure, then finally allowed myself to relax.
Hey! Said a new voice as something tweaked my foot again. Long time no see, dead man!
I opened my eyes and slowly looked up.
Hello, Slippery John.
Hi, Slippery John, said Merrill happily. We're in prison. Slippery John sees you've made an enemy of the Adventurers Guild. That was Slippery John's fault. Should probably have known you needed Slippery John around to protect you from them. Slippery John puts his hands up to that one. He did so. Who are they? Asked Merrill. A big guild that organises adventuring?
Well, we figured that out from the name, I muttered.
Slippery John means they organise it all. Questgivers register with the guild and pay dues. The guild tells the heroes where to go. Questgivers hand out points. Monsters drop loot. The heroes do the quests and come back to the guild to cash in loot and exchange points. The guild sells the loot back to the monsters. Good scam they've got.
There have always been adventurers, of course, but demand for us skyrocketed after the infusion.
Why is that?
Asked Merrill. Slippery John was clearly relishing a rare chance to sound intelligent.
"'Cause monsters don't stay dead, do they? Right after the infusion, Slippery John got a regular gig clearing witch harpies